For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website. Good morning, everyone. I know most, but not all of you. My name is Gyoshin Laurel Roth. I'm one of the practitioners here, one of the priests. And I'll be doing the talk today. We are having an all-day sitting today, so the morning will be slightly different than a typical Sunday morning. We'll have a talk, we'll have a discussion. And then those of you who just joined us for one period of sitting and the talk, we'll leave and we'll continue with our day. But I'm so delighted to see so many people on this cold Sunday morning. So the topic I want to explore today is right effort. Right effort is one of the elements on the path to freedom from suffering, the Noble Eightfold Path. This is the path that Buddha described in his famous very first talk after his awakening. He taught for over 45 years, and he gave hundreds, maybe thousands of sermons to many thousands of people. And he summarized his teachings this way. He said, "I teach one thing and one thing only, suffering and the end of suffering," which is arguably a goal of Buddhism, goal of our practice. So the essence of those many thousands of discourses, which are collected in volumes of Buddhist scriptures, is found in what we know as the Four Noble Truths. So the Four Noble Truths. First, the bad news. The existence of suffering, or dukkha. In other words, life is very stressful. Life is not all kittens and roses. Second, the cause of suffering. The cause of suffering, clinging or attachment to what we desire, grasping, greed. Third noble truth, the good news. So this cause of suffering, it can be eliminated. We can free ourselves from this state of attachment. And then in the fourth noble truth, the Buddha laid out this path to end our suffering, which we usually call the Noble Eightfold Path. So these are right speech, right action, right livelihood, right thought, right view, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. So to help these seem less like a laundry list, they can be grouped into these three essentials of Buddhist training and discipline. So the first group would be ethical conduct, and those would include right speech, right action, right livelihood. And the second group would be wisdom, so that would be right view and right thought. And then the third would be mental discipline, samadhi. And that is where right effort falls. Right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. This is how our mind is disciplined and developed through our practice. So some people compare Buddha to a doctor treating a patient. So the first noble truth diagnoses the disease, and then the second noble truth explains the cause of the disease, and then the third noble truth prescribes a remedy, and the fourth noble truth is the treatment plan. I don't know if that helps you, but it helps some people remember the four noble truths. But so with that quick background, I just want to repeat that the topic I want to explore today is right effort. So maybe we should begin by just acknowledging and appreciating that effort that all of us put forth just to be here today. I don't know the specifics of everyone's situation, but probably for many of us, it would have been easier to sleep in or to read a paper and drink your coffee than to show up here and sit on a cushion and listen to a talk. So Those of us that are here for the all-day sitting are making an effort to participate fully. And we should acknowledge that it takes strong effort of many to keep a sesshin functioning smoothly, with bells ringing on time and meals being served and bathrooms being clean and prostrations being fully made, and our bones and our muscles are aching and our minds are finding endless ways to distract us. In my experience of long sittings, of sesshin, all-day sittings or many-day sittings, I sometimes even question being there, because I find my mind saying, oh, maybe there's more important things that I could be doing or I should be doing. I mean, sometimes there are selfish things like, I could be doing my taxes or reading my garden, or maybe I try to talk myself to, I should be out there actually trying to think about my bodhisattva vows. Why am I not, you know, in a soup kitchen somewhere? Getting something done instead of just sitting here. So I've asked this question more than once in Dokusan, in meetings with a teacher. And there's more than one good answer to this question, but for today, I'll say that part of the answer is that sitting in zazen, especially sitting for longer periods of time, is our training. So following the demanding schedule in noble silence with an open heart. This is our training. And training for what? It's like it's training for how to make a great effort, because we learn about things by doing them, not by reading about them or thinking about them. I mean, if we learn to play a musical instrument, or we learn sports, or making art, you know, through a lot of practice. And participating in the sitting is practice in making an effort. And I just want to clarify, we're talking about right effort, not just effort. So right effort, the word sama in the Pali can be translated as wise or skillful or wholesome. And so right effort, sometimes it's called right diligence, has four parts. The practice of developing wholesome qualities, the practice of retaining wholesome qualities, the practice of releasing unwholesome qualities, and the practice of not developing new unwholesome qualities. So out with the bad and in with the good is one summary. So I'll talk more about this later, but first I just want to discuss other ways we learn about making an effort, because I'm not claiming that the only way to learn about right effort is in a zendo. So the past 2 weeks in Chicago has required all of us to make an extra effort. I mean, just to accomplish the basic needs of our lives, like just getting to where we need to be. It hasn't been a mindless activity. So driving, walking, some people even biking. You know, it's like extra time. You have to plan. You have to dress appropriately. You have to shovel. You have to scrape. Even public transportation hasn't been that reliable. So, and sometimes we've had to pitch in to help others who are less able to rise to the occasion. You hear these stories on the news about, you know, efforts to shelter the homeless or, you know, help people that couldn't cope with their frozen pipes or whatever. I also heard some charming messages about other sentient beings. I heard one that said, don't let your dog out barefoot tomorrow, and keep your bird feeders filled this week. So it seems like when things are more difficult, we're noticing the details in our lives that more often than not just go by unnoticed. So I'm claiming, I'm putting out the idea that extra effort is what is one way to help us pay more attention. And is that a plus? I don't know. Sometimes it feels like a hassle, but it also feels more real. So most mornings I walk out my door And, you know, I go to my car or I go to the CTA stop. And, you know, I'm not really giving it much thought. I might be thinking about something that happened in my childhood. But, you know, if I'm honest, I'll just say that most of the time I'm not aware of what I'm doing. So last week, if I wanted to go out, which I did, I had to look out the window well in advance and assess the situation and decide how much time I needed to shovel the snow off my stairs, clean off my car, clean the parking space, find the clothes, find the tools. I was the opposite of mindless walking out the door to meet the world. So I'm sure you all had your own version of this increase in effort and maybe increase in attention. But it was a very serious matter. I mean, in the less fortunate world, the less pampered world, there was true suffering, and many beings died, large and small. Now, I'll just say that's not all bad news, because there's already speculation that ticks in the forest preserves that were horrible last summer are going to be really reduced this summer because of the cold. So that's cause and effect. So, you know, it's common in mainstream media to portray Zen as this sort of laid back, relaxed state. We're calm, we're serene. It always sounds like a zombie to me. Because, I mean, it's just nothing could be further from the truth. I mean, I think I can honestly say what I resonated with most strongly in my early experiences of Zen practice was when I realized that the expectation was that I'd have to put forth a lot of effort. It's like, this doesn't come cheap. I just love that. But, of course, it was also a little scary. You know, was I up to it? Was I willing to commit to that? I think this zombie-like idea of calmness comes from people that see what we're doing, but they haven't really directly experienced it. It's the same thing with Tai Chi. I practice Tai Chi. And an outsider looks at it, this just looks like you're swaying around and waving your hands. And people say, oh, that looks so relaxing. And it's seriously difficult. And it's learned really slowly and through constant, frequent repetition. You know, there's all these postures, and each one is meticulously prescribed. And then you have to, one follows the other smoothly. And it takes effort to just maintain the attention so that you are not making mistakes. And, you know, you never complete the whole form without any errors, just saying. And every time your mind wanders just a little bit, you do make a mistake or you lose your place. Sometimes you even fall down. But it's also like Zazen, it helps to practice with others, because then when you have this little lapse, you can follow the person next to you and sort of get back on track. So, I mean, I think right effort is another way of saying staying awake. When we're not making an effort, we're often unaware of what we're doing. It's like autopilot. You can drive somewhere and have no memory of how you got there. And, you know, it could be possible to live your whole life on autopilot if you're not paying attention. You can miss the whole thing. So to get back to the Eightfold Path, I'll just say it's not intended to be followed in the order that the instructions are giving. My understanding is these eight components are meant to be developed simultaneously. So according to your life situation, your capacity, they're all linked together, and each one helps the cultivation of the other one. Having said this, however, it seems to me that right effort is an underlying necessity for all of the Eightfold Path, because none of this comes easily. It really doesn't. We have to make an effort to achieve right view, right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right mindfulness, and right concentration. So our Soto Zen practice is often summarized as just sitting. But just sitting doesn't mean, oh, it's merely sitting, piece of cake. It means practicing with our whole heart and make an effort to be just sitting and nothing else. So during our morning service, we're going to chant the Fukan Zazengi, which is the universally recommended instructions for Zazen by Dogen, who's the founder of the Soto Zen lineage. And I just want to read you a short excerpt. Consider the Buddha. Although he was wise at birth, the traces of his 6 years of upright sitting can yet be seen. As for Bodhidharma, although he had received the mind seal, his 9 years of facing a wall is celebrated still. If even the ancient sages were like this, how can we today dispense with wholehearted practice? Therefore, put aside the intellectual practice of investigating words and chasing phrases, and learn to take the backward step that turns the light and shines it inward. Body and mind of themselves will drop away, and your original face will manifest. If you want to attain suchness, practice suchness immediately. So in other words, if Shakyamuni and Bodhidharma still needed to practice, so how can we imagine that we don't also have to do that? You might think I'm saying that right effort means practicing hard, and maybe that's true sometimes, but it's not always or entirely the case. Thich Nhat Hanh, wonderful Vietnamese teacher, says, "The fourfold right diligence," which is his way of saying right effort, "is nourished by joy and interest. If your practice does not bring you joy, you're not practicing correctly." So we shouldn't forget the middle way, the way to practice between the extremes. Don't force ourselves to endure these, extreme ascetic practices or, push ourselves beyond exhaustion. So if our practices just work, sure, that could be a problem. So how else do we cultivate right effort? So we each have different ways of learning, and one of my best ways of learning is to find role models that I admire. So Shakyamuni, Bodhidharma, Suzuki Roshi, Dogen, they're the most impressive role models I can think of, but they're so impressive that they might make us feel incapable of emulating them. So I'm going to look a little closer to home to find some examples to inspire me. I like to look at plants and other animals. Bird migration is very impressive, for example. So the Arctic tern, tiny little bird. It's got a red bill and black cap. It flies 49,700 miles a year. It summers in the Arctic, and then it flies all the way down to the Antarctic for its second summer of the year, and then back to the Arctic for another summer, and back to the Antarctic. It lives over 30 years, so if you add up all the miles that it flies, this tiny little bird, it's the equivalent of 3 trips to the moon and back. So it's not effortless, and a lot of them die during this amazing journey, but they do it to survive. Now, evolution programmed that into their brain, so maybe it's not optional for them, so maybe we can only learn so much from them. But trees. I have this ongoing photography project that I call Tortured Trees, and it documents these unbelievably hostile conditions that trees in Chicago live under. So they have bad soil, road salt, pavement, harsh trimming because of power lines and so forth. I mean, they are really treated badly. And I try to connect with them in my mind. They're sort of born into this difficult situation. Sometimes I make a gassho when I see a particularly challenged tree. Our little tree in front of the Zendo, that tree has a tough life. Sometimes I bring it food, a little liquid fertilizer, and I think if there's a drought, we should probably give it water. When I first started practicing here, I put a little fence around its area, and then I put some other plants in that fence, thinking, well, you know, if it looks nice, if it looks like somebody's taking care of it, maybe people won't treat it so much like an inanimate object. But then that lasted for a couple of weeks, and then the city came and took everything away and said, it was against the law. It's against an ordinance in Chicago to do that. So I confess I'm sort of not paying as much attention to that tree, but every now and then I sort of apologize to it silently. So when we think about it, you can find inspiring role models all around. When I visit my sister-in-law in the nursing home where she lives, I see these doctors and nurses and aides and residents. They are making an amazing effort just to maintain some quality of life in this really difficult situation. When I tutor my 15-year-old nephew, Leo, he was diagnosed with ADHD when he was just a little kid. And sometimes I see him making an effort to respond to me. He's very smart, and he can learn really quickly if he can find a way to pay attention. But sometimes it seems like he's putting his effort into just resistance. But I have to realize that for him, paying attention is about as hard as doing chin-ups is for me, which I can't do any chin-ups. So Leo and I have to work toward the moments when he can pay a little bit of attention. So I think it's fun. You can find your own inspirations and try to see the world through this lens of effort. So I want to end with some words from Jack Kornfield. I've never met him or heard him in person, but he's always been inspiring to me. He trained in Thailand and India and Burma, and he's one of the key people that brought Buddhism to the West in a couple of centers on the East and West Coast. And one of his teachers was Ajahn Chah. Anyway, I found a talk about right effort by Jack Kornfield on the internet, and I'm going to read you a couple of sections from it. He began by quoting a teacher I never heard of called an Indian master called Ramana Maharshi, who said, "Enlightenment is not your birthright. Those who succeed do so only through proper effort." So that was his introduction. And he says, this is now Kornfield, "This way of effort is the effort more of surrender, of letting go, rather than trying to attain something. It's surrender to be in each moment in a balanced way. If one is to succeed in anything, the success must come gently, with a great deal of effort, but with no stress or obsession. So it's rather the effort to be here again and again and again, and to truly see that things arise and that they pass away. They're born, they die, we don't own anything, none of it is ours." And then he asks some questions, which we can maybe think about in our discussion period if we want to. Here are his questions. Think about right effort for a moment. Where are you making too much effort in your life? What things do you do where it's too tight and too hard? You need to learn balance. Where do you try too hard or grasp too much? Where do you make too little effort in your life? Where are you lazy or habitual? What aspects of your life could be ennobled or awakened with more effort? Think about them. Which ones? Where is your life too internal? Where do you shy away out of fear from the world of events and circumstances around you? compares your life to external, or you don't sit enough, you don't take enough silence, you don't listen inside to your heart, to what you care about, make it inform your life. You actually know the answers to those things, he says. They come pretty easily to us. We just forget to ask. And we don't want to ask because it might mean we have to rearrange our life. But as he says, our life is going to be rearranged anyway. So we might as well rearrange it ourselves. He says, you can stall for a while, you can really drag your feet, but it's not as interesting. So I'll end there. Thank you. And invite comments from anyone, either in response to Jack Kornfield's questions, in response to anything else I said, or anything else you'd like to bring up. Time is your life when you're the dough one.
Yeah.
Time rules. Ishan. But not phoning it in.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, right. And so, like that old saying, you know, 90% of success is just showing up.
Mm-hmm.
And I always like to tell people, like, 100% of success with Zazen is just showing up. So we are making an effort just by showing up. Mm-hmm. You know, how often can we make bread with ourselves?
Everybody should pat themselves on the back. Yes.
I like especially what made possible. I really enjoyed the part about the thing that inspired me. The tree and animals and so on. I was thinking about how much the medical patients I work with inspired me. I worked in a hospital that exists primarily to serve patients with very serious illnesses or injuries. And my job was mostly to provide support for them. And it's really, obviously, the job is a great eye opener in terms of impermanence and the lessons of suffering. But also, it really puts me to shame sometimes in terms of my own inadequate efforts myself when here are people who very often, where it means so much to them just have a visitor coming for an hour, you know, family member, which they savor really like a fine wine, where even a smile means so much to them. You know, people who they talk sometimes to people who come in even to clean their room, who for some reason most of our staff who clean are Spanish speaking, don't know a word of English or very little English, and sometimes just the way in which they gently come in and kind of bob their heads to them, acknowledge that means a great deal to them. And these are people who really love life incredibly. You know, their lives are both paradoxically very disturbing to them, but also they love life on such a level that they're even willing to give it up at times, you know, and there's no quality to it. So I really think that I think my job is often a place where I find my where I feel like I'm practicing better than even when I'm meditating. Mm-hmm. So I think I'm really very inspired by my patients.
Thank you. Thank you for those comments. The path to sobriety takes a great deal of effort. David. Thank you for thanking me. Jerry.
Yeah.
Did you have to do a lot of physical therapy?
Yeah, like 6 months.
Yeah, that's a huge effort. I'm always impressed that physical therapists are able to handle the hostility they get from their patients. People hate to make that effort, and they get so mad at their physical therapist. I think physical therapists probably need mental therapists to get them through. People really, it's very hard work getting back on their feet. I've seen that with a couple family members. Well, if there are no more comments, I think we'll have announcements first and then for vows.